Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that has the courage to discuss the economic, political, and social necessity of the Bills leaving the AFC East, otherwise known as the Buffalo Exit. My name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
I cheated. That is how I got through that. I wrote that down. I apologize.
It's called being prepared and a good host, I think. Like, you're allowed to...
Right, like, no. You could do what I did last time, which was be like, oh, this is going to be spontaneous and funny and tied into a comment, and I didn't even mention it to either of you, and it wasn't funny, and it screwed up both. And we know Frank's approach to the intro, so, I mean, we Frank and I obviously just have sabotaged this now.
But, no, so, I mean, this is the standard meta kind of commentary about the intro that we do at the beginning of every episode for people who are joining us now in our fifth season
of 5
this podcast.
The time travel season.
To believe, but we are well on to our cotton anniversary here. I think
I should know that because we just had my fifth anniversary.
I was gonna say, I think we did too. That's actually something. It's an easy way to remember this, is both Frank and I got married the same year we started this podcast. Anyway, so let's talk about things that aren't
not to each other.
Yeah,
not that there would be anything wrong with that. It's just for clarity's sake, we're not married to each other.
And I don't know if it was legal in the state of Virginia at that time.
At that time, probably not.
Right. Yeah. So it's still the off season, folks, which is why we're kind of rounding into midseason form, and there's no football. Of the American variety. I hope everyone's enjoying the Euro and the Copa America for what that was. And we could talk about that maybe at the end of the podcast. But let's talk some fake football stories, because there are no real football stories right now.
Mm-hmm.
The first fake football story I'd like to talk about is that there's been a lot of rumbling about Tyrod Taylor getting a midseason contract extension should he perform well, basically as the kind of more quarterbacks have kind of been locked down in the offseason. Obviously, Brock Osweiler got the huge deal kind of in April when the free agency really started, but then there's been more movement on some of the other guys since then. So the question is, I have for you gentlemen, is let's say Tyrod is 8-0. Let's just say it. He's 8-0. He's beaten the Patriots in week 4 with Tom Brady out. He's beaten the Cardinals at home. He's beaten the Ravens on the road. He's not putting up Tom Brady numbers. But he's also putting up another Pro Bowl caliber season at minimum, with the defense performing well and the running game performing well. The whole team's performing well. We're 8-0.
Okay.
Does Tyrod Taylor get the official? And I'm going to call it the Russell Wilson deal. You can call it the Andrew Luck deal, but basically the Stone Cold Lead Pipe Lock, like, you're our quarterback until otherwise deal. Does he get the Ryan Tannehill, we're going to give you 3 years and a ton of money, but then after that, you're kind of on your own? Or does we wait for the offseason and now it's and eight games too much? Eight games is eight games too less or too little. So we'll start with Frank.
Yeah, I think he gets the Ryan Fitzpatrick extension where everyone's like, oh, no, or the Trent Edwards one. I'm glad you chose positive role models as opposed to, like, when Dick Duran got his extension after a 5-1 start and they kept waiting for that win to happen.
Yeah, I think we're all waiting for the Fitz comparison, so kudos to Scott for actually doing something resembling.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he was
to drag us in the negative direction.
He's probably laying the trap for me, right? Like,
that was how I was introing it to you guys when we talked about this beforehand, so
right.
I assume the listeners were going to fill in the gaps there.
Yes.
As to what other Bills quarterbacks have been extended in midseason only to fail terribly and then end up on a division rival where they also are not that great. So
I will say I don't really know very much about his agent, other than his agent seems to be sort of demanding and maybe a little green based on some of the, like, stuff he's been saying in the offseason. If I remember right, he was very I think, point being, I think that, yes, they would probably jump at a midseason extension provided it was of the 5 or 6 year variety. And not the two-year variety. I think the other reason you might do a mid-season extension is the recent Andrew Luck contract, because that's only for, I think, $24 million a year for, you know, the best young quarterback in the league. And so I read about this on Buffalo Rumblings and some other places, and I think the thinking is right that while Brock Osweiler has a ridiculous contract compared to what he's performed, you know, Andrew Luck is much better and much more desirable and at $24 million. So you're not exactly going to be starting there. You'll be able to, as the Bills say, you're great, but you're not Andrew Luck. And you just have to kind of eat that. And, you know, so I think that gets up for your quarterback. So yeah, I think that that gets done. And if they're 8-0 and he's posting Tyrod Taylor numbers, I'm okay with that. I have no, you know, I think that's fine. I think that's better than him.
It's a big enough sample size.
Well, it's as big as any sample size that you're going to get in football, right? I mean, you could go another 8 games, but we've had football players that have been terrible after that or done really well. I think that you'll know who he is. And I think that'll work. I think
That would mean he would be, as he was 8-6 last year, right? Mm-hmm. So that means he would have essentially 22 games under his belt and would be 16-6 as a starting quarterback.
Right.
Not too shabby. Paul?
No. Right, and it is a smaller, you know, sample size, but I think what Frank was driving at too is in the NFL, when it comes to paying quarterbacks, you're not going to get a large enough sample size. You're going to have to make the decision early to say this is going to be the guy or to cut ties. I do have, before I dive into this, one breaking news story did come up on the tweet deck. The Pennsylvania Attorney General's office has officially dismissed the investigation that revolved around the February nightclub brawl involving LeSean McCoy. So that literally just came in 6 minutes ago. So thank you, Twitter, for that news. Back onto the Tyrod topic. I agree with Frank. This is, we all drank the Tyrod Kool-Aid to a degree last year, me especially. I really think he is a solid quarterback and the best we've seen on this team in years. I was listening to the radio on the way home. They're talking about, I believe it was Pro Football Outsiders, already ranks him as what would be considered an above-average NFL quarterback after one season as a starter. That's impressive right there. And if he does, you know, start off really hot, if he ends up being 8-0, here's what you're going to have to hope. You're either going to think, if you wait till the end of the year, you're essentially going to say, like, well, we don't believe this, and if you're right, you go 8-8, and then you haven't solved anything anyway. And if you're wrong, then you go 14-2, and you're in a Flacco situation where you end up paying him a lot more than he might be worth normally. So I think it's the smart move if he starts off, you know, really well. And that's going to be, there's going to be pressure on Tyrod, and I do think the one caveat I make is it should in fact be a mid-season contract. Let's get 8 games under the belt as opposed to 4 or 5. That was the one thing about the deal we didn't mention earlier with Fitzpatrick. This team is 5-2 this time. So all right, we'll give it to him. To be fair, at the time they were 4-2, and then they immediately went 5-2. So they were 6 games in. I'd rather see them a good 8 games in. With some hard games out of the way, and then they'll have all their December games at home, or they got 3 December games at home. So yeah, I'm fully in favor of it because I think it's tough to get a franchise quarterback. We have not seen one in Buffalo in many years, and if this is the opportunity, which I think it is, you gotta strike while the iron's hot.
Okay. No, I mean I don't think that I would be okay waiting. I would, if they said they wanted to let it play out, I don't think that the difference in the you know, if you're going to say Andrew Luck, you're never going to get Andrew Luck money if you're Tyrod Taylor. So the difference is between 16 games of it is $22 million a year, and 8 games this year is $20 million a year. To me, that's not, I'd rather take the 8 games than the $2 million a year. But again, now you're kind of getting into the very kind of weedy kind of details of contracts and that kind of thing. So I'm not opposed to it in principle. But again, I mean, obviously this is kind of best case scenario, and I think we'd all be ecstatic if that was what was really going on. I think that's still, I'd be okay with waiting too. But anyway, I don't think any of us are too worried about the Bills going 8-0 to start off the season, and we'll come back to the wacky schedule.
Spoiler alert.
Where I don't think they're definitely not going to go 8-0 in the wacky schedule, regardless of what that super loud bird behind the bed thinks.
I was going to say, that's, for those of you who are following, that is not actually a tweet. a Twitter alert. That's not what happens when we get a tweet. That is a physical, real tweet from a real, actual bird that you are hearing. One of us is, in fact, podcasting El Fresco. I won't give up that person's name, but it might rhyme with Brank.
If it's distracting, I can go inside.
No, it's not.
It's amazing. Fantastic. It's the best thing ever.
This is an off-season podcast. If you do not have something like a super loud bird to distract us from the horrific lack of content we have to discuss after this topic, what else do we have?
It was disgustingly gross, and my baby, for everyone who cares to know, it was sleep training, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to risk a screaming 9-month-old, now a 9-month-old. I'll just go outside and enjoy the little bit of breeze that is now available to me. 100%. So,
absolutely. Yeah. No, drink it in, folks. This is good pod right here. So continuing with good pod, one of the off-season questions that we got during the season was kind of Bills about the Bills, about the Bills, in terms of how do we get our news, what media sources do we like? Frank had a little riff a couple weeks ago about, I think it was the local Buffalo radio.
Yeah, the WGR guys.
But maybe we could talk a little bit more about the interwebs and print media and that kind of thing and how we get our news. So why don't we start with Paul this time?
Sure. This is it's an interesting question. It was re-raised just today by Andrew, one of our listeners. Thank you, Andrew, who's communicated with us now for all of the last season. So it is great to be hearing from him, or at least most of the last season. So, you know, there are a few sources. We often talk about the blog we read, Buffalo Rumblings, which is a great source of news. Now, what's interesting is they've just gone over a change in leadership for the first time since I've been following them, which I think is, what, 6 or 7 years I've been following them.
It's the first one ever, really, that they've had. They had the same guy for the first 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, so, best of luck to him. So it's going to be interesting to see, how, in fact, that changes, their content. It's the off season right now. You can't tell good or bad how it's going to go, but once the season starts, once the news starts breaking around training camp, how well will they do handling that news? That said, they've done enough to keep me engaged during the first 6 years or 7 years, actually more than that. It was probably 2008-09 I got into it, so a long time ago that I've been listening, reading. That's the verb I'm looking for, that site. So that's a good source of news. Locally, I live here in the Buffalo area. WGRZ-TV tends to be a good source. That's the NBC affiliate in this area. And I would say print, the Buffalo News will get, lambasted a little bit, but I feel like you're not going to get as in-depth focus on the Bills from people who watch, 16 games a year, 60 minutes a game. You just don't get that from ESPN and national sources. So I still think they're a good go-to source with a lot of veteran writers, good and bad, on the unit. And then, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, follow a lot of Bills people on Twitter. You're probably going to get some breaking news and some good opinions. So I haven't taken all of Frank's answers, but those were some of them that were that I get my news from.
I think that for me, and those are excellent sources, and those are the ones I kind of look at. I think you have to start weeding out who is good at what. So, like you said, the Buffalo News, right? Good and bad. I think the more you steer clear of the columnists, and the more you stick with the beat writers, and that's really for any sport and any team, in my mind. Beat writers are the guys who know more about what's going on, and they are less willing to interject their own sort of spin into something. So you're going to get a little bit better of a read of what's going on from them, or at least a little more of an opportunity to kind of define your own thoughts on the topic. That's one of the things I liked about Buffalo Rumblings is they had a pretty good editorial/reporting balance. There's just a downside to everything. There's a Vic Carucci and there's a Jerry Sullivan, and those guys like really don't care as much about what's happening. They just want to kind of fit their little information into their story. I think WGR, the radio station, is actually a really good resource. I think it's the same thing, though, that there's a distinction between when Sal Capaccio comes on and literally gives you the scoop from training camp and having to endure, Mike Shope's latest afternoon
drive
thought,
time
like
blitz,
thought
yeah.
right thought puppy that, like, I don't even believe he believes half the time, but he's just sort of interested in that today and wants to ramble, and it, you know, sometimes it's great, sometimes, a lot of times it's terrible. And the morning guys are, they can do the same thing. Like, if they want to talk about something, they're going to talk about something, and that's what they want to talk about, and it doesn't always necessarily mesh up with what I think, anyway, is the most important. But that's kind of it. I mean, specific names is, like, for me, it's Sal Capaccio, who has gotten a lot better now that he's sort of focusing more on a beat. And who's the guy who went to KBW from WGR? Joe Buscaglia.
Joe Buscaglia, yeah.
He's very on top of it and good. Like, that's – and Buffalo Rumblings, really. And, I'm sort of with Paul. I don't really know how this change of leadership is going to affect things. But I also go to the Buffalo Bills Reddit every now and then, which isn't really a great news source because, like, they're just sort of reposting things that are elsewhere. But it's not a bad place to find some instant reaction and maybe find a link that you weren't aware of. So, but, yeah, the news is everywhere now, right? Like, you really just got to find – one or two people that you like. I've given up on, like, the Democrat and Chronicle from Rochester. Like, I don't go there anymore for Bills coverage.
Yeah, that's really seemed to have gone downhill in recent, which surprised me, because I used to read that a little bit when I lived in D.C. And
I feel like the Syracuse paper at this point I go to more than the Democrat and Chronicle.
I'm definitely on Syracuse.com more.
Yeah, they've really sort of just decided that, like, Sal is going to be it, and Sal is just, like, that's the thing, like, at the Democrat and Chronicle, there is no distinction, because it's a smaller paper, and it's a smaller town, and there's cuts, and so there is no distinction between the beat writer and the columnist. They're the same person, so everything...
The editorial wall is not there. Yeah.
There is no editorial wall, right? It's like when Paul Hamilton on WGR, who's really more of a hockey guy, gets asked about football. He has no filter, he doesn't care, he's just gonna, like, put it through his lens. And that's kind of what we get. So for the most part, I think at this point you've got to find people as opposed to a specific kind of source. You
that's
know what I'm saying?
Good. That's usually good.
Especially in this age of Twitter, where you can just follow
individual people.
Individual people.
I agree. I mean, that's one of the things is I followed Buscaglia to the ABC affiliate in Buffalo because he was so good on WGR. I think WGR is still good with Capaccio. I think I do read his stuff pretty regularly during the season, especially.
Yeah.
I do read the Buffalo News occasionally, but honestly, like, I don't care. Like, I don't have a VPN set up, and I don't want to deal with the paywall, so if I just find myself going there less. So that's part of it. Obviously, Buffalo Rumblings, like we talked about. I do find myself reading more of the national stuff on the Bills. I like Pro Football Focus. I think they do good analysis. I think they get into the meat, into the players, into the schemes. You know, they do that level of analysis that you don't see from a lot of the national places, and frankly, you don't see from some of the local places. And I like going to national places when I can because they have a broader perspective and they're able to put things in context. Because I can say that, Preston Brown looked pretty good last game, but then, you know, I'm not an expert and I can go to the national thing and they say, oh, actually, Preston Brown is the 90th ranked linebacker in the league. It's like, maybe he's not that good then. Maybe my, you know, that you can't get from someone who only looks at Bills games because he's not going to be able to. Preston Brown may have had a good game, but that doesn't change the fact that he's not a great linebacker or he wasn't having a great season last year. So I like having an outside perspective. So I do pay a little more attention to BFF specifically. I do read still, like, Peter King's column usually during the season, at least half the time, just because he doesn't have great analysis, and I don't really care about a lot of his garbage, but whatever, I like seeing him talk about the Bills. Makes me feel important.
You know, go ahead. I just didn't want to forget that.
Go ahead. Go.
Mike Rodak. Like, I don't hate Mike Rodak at ESPN.
Yeah, I don't hate him either.
AFC East guy.
It's better than when James Walker was the AFC East guy. I couldn't read that blog when James Walker was doing it because he was so just horrifically biased. I think like, it's the same thing with the AFC East thing on ESPN. Like, I do kind of keep up with the Rodak blog. A, it's free. B, it is a platform to, again, get better context for things. Like, when he was able to repost the Ravens article about why Brian Billick and, or whoever it was, might have been Billick, it might have been someone else, saying that they didn't think Ed Reed was going to be a great coach because Ed Reed was just instinctual and naturally brilliant, and it wasn't clear that he was going to be able to get that across. And that's something that, again, I mean, I don't know. Again, you can have, like, I've read plenty of articles, I think, from the Buffalo News and other spots where they'll go and they'll ask national media commentators, the smart ones, about, you know, trying to put things in a bigger context. But that's something that comes a lot more naturally. And I think they even did some good ones. They've been doing decent ones in the last couple days with some of these, like, AFC East questions and how long do we think Brady's going to go and that kind of thing. So I still read the ESPN stuff. I know they're the monster of the mothership, but whatever. I'm not going to hold that against them just because they're big.
Well, with the NFL, there's also, like, limited access, right? Like, WGR is going to get the first crack at things, and then ESPN as well. Like, they're kind of, because of their ties to the NFL and the team, that's who's going to get the bigger interviews and the press conferences, and they're going to get
they have those connections, and, you know, Berman's going to call, you know, whoever he knows in the head office or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's I think that was a nice little segment there. That was incredible. Yeah.
We should stop now because that's probably as good as it's going to get. But, you know.
Yeah.
Our podcast.
Everyone should listen to our podcast.
Not shortcut the process.
Right.
Yeah. And the reasons you want to listen to our podcast include garbage like wacky schedule time.
Woo! Circus.
Yeah. So this, briefly recapping for people who don't remember, we're doing our wacky schedule. We usually do this a little earlier when we know less about the teams. We were doing actual season previews once the training camp starts and we know a little bit more about how things shake up with the opponents. But we'll jump right in. So this is the end of the world edition of the Bills wacky schedule. So let's picture end of September, early October. The big one happens in California. The massive earthquake. The San Andreas, the whole mother load, everything breaks. You know, slips into the ocean, San Francisco, all Southern California, you know, they split into separate kind of subcontinents off the shore there. So week 5, the Bills have to play at the LA Rams. So the NFL is obviously going to keep the game going.
Right.
You're not gonna. You can't stop. The games must go on. This is clear.
I just need to call out Google, which has this is a home game, which it is of course not. So shame on you, Google.
Okay. Hopefully, I am right in saying that this is actually.
No, it's at air because I remember when it was. You know, they talked about
right,
this.
Right.
Like,
hey,
they make a second trip to LA, and they do.
I'm gonna double check with BuffaloBills.com, but yes, we're gonna go with it.
3 trips to the West Coast. I remember this year for the Bills, I think, was at Rams, at Seahawks, and at Raiders. So big earthquake happens. Essentially, do you guys remember the movie Escape from L.A.?
Yes, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, a follow-on to Escape from New York, which was arguably a better movie, but Escape from L.A. just as campy and terrible. So basically, the Bills, it happens pretty quick after the San Andreas kind of collapse. That the Bills end up having to play in Los Angeles. So essentially they play in the Escape from L.A. kind of hellscape.
Okay.
And so they're forced to fly in. The NFL is trying to provide some private security. You know, they get some goons to try and keep people, you know, protect the teams on the way to the stadium. But then after that, it's kind of, you can only do so much, right? You know?
Right.
So why don't we start with Frank on this one?
So we're not at Mad Max yet, where, like, society is like a crumbling, you know, relic of itself.
There's a certain amount of warlordism that's breaking out. You know, there's definitely no kind of central government in place in L.A. at this point. You know,
but the Bills are already in L.A. So, like, does this happen just...
So it happens...
While they're in L.A. So, like, they don't have to, like, get to L.A. We're assuming for, like, the sake of this, like, they are in L.A. already. There's, like, no having to break in to play the game.
They've gone... They flew... You know, they had to... The NFL parachuted them into L.A., After it happened,
okay,
and promised them they would have a way out if they played the game. You know, they took the team hostage, so it's gonna be televised somehow because this is great ratings.
Right. Yeah, of course. It's almost so they've like parachute dropped in, and I'm imagining Roger Goodell is like, if you don't win the game, then you can't leave and you forfeit the rest of your season.
But then they have to. Well, I don't know about that.
I think they should have to escape LA.
They have to escape LA. They have to beat the Rams and then escape LA.
I think so. Like, well, if they beat the Rams, they are allowed to leave.
Okay.
Like, but see, now you kind of talk yourself into a corner, because if that applies and you pick the Rams to win this game, it's going to affect the remaining 11.
I know, that's kind of why I left
Bills versus 49ers at Los Angeles.
This is a key game, guys. This is a key game.
It's a key game. So we've got warlordism. We've got, you know, the potential for being forever trapped in the warlord hell of Los Angeles.
Highly motivated
team. Rams, of course, got a new quarterback. I think that's very important.
That's true.
That's true.
You know, he might be beginning at this point in post-LA.
He might be, but I think this is what happens. I think it's a case of, you know, these young quarterbacks, they start too early, they're asked to do too much, and they are not ready to be warlords the moment they step on the field. So this is week 5. It's going to be a big test for him. And I don't think that this Rams court, I think it's going to be a big test. I think the Rex Ryan defense is, look, if there's a guy who's ready to step in and be a warlord, it's the Ryan brothers. I think they show up and they're ready to fight, and this quarterback is in over his head, and his head is on a spike before the end of the game. So I'm going to say the Bills win 30 to 15.
They earn their escape.
I think they do. I think they establish their dominance over the Rams, and they leave the bleeding Rams bodies to be picked over by the rest of the inhabitants of Los Angeles.
Wow.
Well, yeah, clearly.
Mostly based on the inexperienced quarterback. I just, like, that's the important key.
Yeah, no, that's the important part. Agreed. Yes. I mean, Paul, that's a tough act to follow. Right,
you know, that's what I was just going to say. I had this whole spiel plan talking about, you know, well, Donald Pleasance isn't around like he was in New York, and how, you know, just...
Is Steve Buscemi guiding the Bills
I was actually going to mention Buscemi, and, you know, is Pam Grier there, because that makes a big difference in terms of how the team adjusts. And, of course, knowing it's still a West Coast game, and they'll struggle there. So
time difference.
No matter how motivated, you know, they don't win on the West Coast much. So that they might get there and be like, this hellscape looks largely like the same one we see every time we go on the road. But, I mean, God, Warlord is that Frank's answer about the Ryans particularly being built for this environment. I mean, what's the counter to that? I don't know what it is, so I'm also picking the Bills.
Okay.
Precisely. Fair enough. I like it.
Fair enough. That's kind of the key factor here, I think, is the fans and the condition of the stadium. Like, I don't know if the quasi-paramilitary force that the NFL employs to keep order and keep, you know, because let's face it, I mean, the Bills are going to be tough, but if there's 80,000 pissed off Rams, well, it's LA, so 40,000. 40,000 pissed off Rams fans show up for this game and they get on the field, I mean, it's game over. I mean, the Rams are going to win in a walk. So I'm a little concerned that the Bills aren't going to be able to deal with the stadium, you know, noise for one, but also, you know, stuff being thrown at them, you know, people bringing machine guns and stuff into the stadium. I, you know, feels like that's a lot to deal with. So I'm going to say the Rams win in a close one. I feel like this is like a 7-6 nail biter. So, and this kind of leads nicely into the next week's problem. So, game was originally scheduled to be, you know, Bills at home, you know, against the 49ers. Mm. Problem is 49ers can't make it, all right, because of the earthquake and everything. However, you know, so the Bills, as they're fleeing Los Angeles, they make it to the San Francisco Island, okay? So San Francisco is kind of on a different island because it's far enough apart from L.A. There's two separate islands at this point.
Okay.
So they make it over. You know, they get there, and so, you know, they're just going to play the game in San Francisco. All right, then the NFL will make it up to them later in terms of they'll get another home game, you know, something.
We're going to hold you too.
Mm.
Yeah. So what's going to happen is, however, at this point, things have gotten a little better. All right, society started, especially in San Francisco, an area that's maybe a little more well prepared for the big one, maybe a little better run city. Anyway, they end up on a much better path. Do you guys remember the movie Demolition Man?
Takes place in Los Angeles.
However, in this particular kind of future that we're talking about, San Francisco ends up becoming the, utopian paradise, or is it, of San Francisco? And so the Bills have to play at the beautiful stadium in Santa Clara. However they show up, you know, in, you know, roving electric things, there's, however they get fined anytime they swear. Does anyone like that? They can't eat, you know, they go to Taco Bell before the game and that's the big meal.
Yeah.
You know, is this
in the future, all restaurants are Taco Bell. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They survived the restaurant wars of the early 2000s.
They sure did.
So we're going to start with Paul on this one. Paul?
Oh, boy. This is a tough one to analyze. Again, I'm still stuck with the fact that they're on the West Coast, even when you throw all of that information at me. Like, to me...
The time lag, still.
Yeah, still. I still can't get used to that. But maybe it'll help them to have stayed out there and done it. Now,
That is what they used to do in the 60s. They used to schedule the team so they could play back-to-back West Coast games, and they could just sort of, like, hole up out there for 2 weeks.
Right. Were the Bills able to steal weapons from the museum display?
They didn't go to the history museum.
See, because I'm like 75% Bills right now, but that would have made me 100.
Well, sure, yeah. No, they didn't. Rex Ryan, good football tactician, not prepared for, you know, quasi-fascist utopia San Francisco.
Right.
See, I might vote the reverse on that. He might be a better despot than football quarterback. Anyway, go ahead, continue.
Who's going to be are we going to – I think, you know, Kaepernick has really had a rough go of it. He's still with them now, right?
He's falling off the wagon.
He's off – okay. All right.
I don't even know. That's a good question.
Because it's supposed to be Gebert at this point. Well, no, it's I'm so backed up on San Francisco starting quarterbacks at this point. Either way, both of their games depend on mobility, more so than Tyrod's does, who plays well with mobility, but at least can hit a deep ball. So with that in mind, with the ground, I'm still thinking it's better with the ground. I think there are going to be some aftershocks, and I think that bodes in the Bills' favor. So I'm going to go with the Bills in this one.
I think it's interesting.
San Francisco's just not a good team. Yeah, you can't argue with that.
That's true. Right? I think that they would be more prepared for aftershocks, though. I think that being from San Francisco, they're probably a little less intimidated by that. I don't know that that's enough to give them the edge. I want to know if anybody has been giving a subconscious command that they can't. Like, the thing would be, like, if you could kidnap the Bills and, like, give them a subconscious command that they couldn't tackle.
Have they been unconsciously conditioned?
Correct. But then there would be some, like, trick where it's like, oh, but you didn't, like they unconsciously condition Sammy Watkins so that he can't catch the football. But, like, they didn't unconsciously, you know, they didn't say he couldn't run the football or that they couldn't throw it to somebody else or that.
That would be what would happen, yeah,
right,
exactly.
It'd be like a trick.
The evil dictator.
Right.
The evil dictator puts Tyrod Taylor in cryostasis and it says, whenever you throw the ball, throw it to, you know, the Niners, and so the Bills realize this halfway through the game, and then Tyrod comes out in the second half, and he's just running the option the whole time.
Yep,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's
and
the plot line.
Then they flip it to EJ, who then throws it to the Bills, because they're sort of resting on their laurels.
You said Niners for a second, and I'm like, yeah, that's EJ.
Yeah. But they're resting on their laurels. They didn't actually start any cornerbacks because they were like, there's no point. We don't have to cover anybody.
I see. Runs. They played like a 4-6, but with a lot of linebackers. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Again, I think, San Francisco's a hurting team. And, when the jingles are all played on the radio and the styrofoam fills the car that is this football game, the Bills will emerge victorious.
Okay, so... here's my concern. I don't see how Rex Ryan gets to this game. I feel like he's just not going to – I feel like they're going to take him away for violations of the verbal morality statute or various other kind of, you know, food-related things. Obviously, as everyone remembers, direct sexual contact was outlawed in Demolition Man. So I don't know how they'll feel about anyone with a foot fetish. That's probably not going to end well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Rex Ryan does not make this game. That
he said, also doesn't strike me as a person who would know how to use the shells.
probably doesn't know how to use the three seashells.
Yep.
This is way down. I hope people see Demolition Man, because this is going to be really terrible if it's not. But anyway, so yeah, I don't think Rex Ryan wins the game. I still think with Greg Roman and, you know, Rob Ryan's probably not making two. Yeah. We'll just put him. He's not also making the game. So who's the defensive coordinator? What's his name? Henderson something?
Doesn't matter.
Thurman's?
Yeah.
No, Thurman's, yeah.
Dick Geronimo.
Is it Dennis Thurman
Donnie,
or Matt
Brooks? Dennis Thurman, yeah. I think that's his name, maybe. Anyway. So he does a fine job, and we get out of there with a win. I still think it's a Bills win, even with Rex Ryan kind of in cryostasis.
Okay.
So anyway, our tour of the post-earthquake devastation continues. And in fact, we find out at this point it's actually not just San Francisco. It's actually the whole country has been affected by this earthquake. They go at the Dolphins next week. The stadium's underwater.
Yes.
Stadium's underwater. Stadium's underwater. It's just one of those things. They didn't have a chance to clear it. The Dolphins, you know, pro-life, Sun Life Stadium, underwater. So I'm trying to imagine what the game is. I think what we're going to do is we're going to say that they're playing in scuba gear.
Okay.
They're playing in scuba gear. It's going to affect the passing game, no doubt. I think that's pretty clear. But again, the NFL is forcing them to play. They're not going to get their game checks unless they play in scuba gear in 100 feet of water. So, Paul, or why don't we start with Frank this time?
Okay, are they playing actual dolphins again, or is it just...
No. This is the real dolphins. This is human dolphins, or human...
Football players.
Human football players.
Right, if we put last year's condition on this, I can't see you not picking the Dolphins.
That's what I was hoping was the coup de grace, was not only underwater, but last year's Dolphins, which were real dolphins, made
come back for vengeance.
Right. Because then I'm like, this gets very difficult. Because if you throw the football, it's going to go up. And the weird thing about it is, I think the passing game will suffer, but it will suffer in that everything will be a completion or an interception, since the football will never touch the ground. There will be infinite fumbles, right? Because like you would imagine the ball would float, particularly if it's one of these overinflated footballs. Unless the NFL passed some sort of quick rule about being if it touches the surface of the water, then that's actually down.
Dead ball, incomplete pass.
Yeah. Scuba gear underwater. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. And I would want to know who the fatter team is, because I think that would affect buoyancy. Do we have any swimmers? We have an Olympian or a near Olympian on the team. But most, I think the biggest thing here is that the Bills have already won two in a row, though, so I think they have to drop one that everyone expects they win in Miami.
Yeah.
So I think that
they're looking ahead to finally getting home next week.
Yeah, I think the underwater is a bit of a ruse here, and this is really a trap. Well, it's an underwater trap game, and it's meant to catch crabs, but they're going to catch some buffalo.
The most dangerous trap of all. Trap game of them all. The underwater trap.
Yep.
Okay, so you're going to go with the Dolphins then.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to go with the trap game. I think they're going to get caught in the riptide, if you will, and pulled in.
Yep. All right. Paul, why don't you give us your thoughts on the Bills?
Sure. I'm going to say Dolphins in this one as well. And I think, you know, their defensive line is just much more efficient at utilizing the swim move to get to the quarterback.
Slam dunk for Paul Dewey.
Yep. With that being the case, I just can't. And again, also agree with the road letdown thing. So I've made my pun.
I know what the
road challenge is. I've had them winning two on the road, one unexpectedly. Since they weren't supposed to be in San Fran, I got to go with the Dolphins here.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I think the Bills can get this one done. I think I have confidence. I think it comes down to Sean McCoy here. I feel like he's a very slippery runner, and I feel like that it's going to apply more so underwater. I feel like, again, passing game's not going to be effective underwater, given the difficulties, you know, the risks involved with passing. So there's going to be a lot of handoffs, and I feel like... If it's a game of running backs and quarterbacks, I'm taking Tyrod and LeSean over Ryan Tannehill and I don't even know who the Miami running back is at this point. But is it Matt Forte? Did he end up on the Dolphins? Am I getting that? No, he ended up on the Jets. He was on the Jets.
Right. I feel like we should know. I think the guy had a 1,000-yard season last year, but...
The next week, so this is going to be, finally the Bills get home. However, the results of the earthquakes and everything have been pretty dramatic. It's affected Mexico. Basically, the Mexican climate has become unstable. A lot of people are leaving Mexico, but also a lot of animals are leaving Mexico. And when things from Mexico come north, those things include killer bees. And at this point, the killer bees have traveled north in the 3 or 4 weeks since the catastrophe and have entered Buffalo. And so at this point, the Bills, the rock pile infested by killer bees. And again, the game must go on. So Bills at home versus Patriots in a stadium infested with killer bees. Paul, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Okay, so we're talking actual killer bees here, not the wrestling tag team of the 80s, correct?
Yes, actual insect killer bees, not a wrestling tag team.
Right. Or the SNL. Okay, that's fine, yeah.
Right, so not the SNL. And then the third, I just want to verify it's not, are the famous Pittsburgh Steelers offense. Steelers all dressed as bees in their alternative jerseys. So
no,
the Bills aren't
real bees.
The Steelers aren't invading. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so with all of those things in mind, there's so many puns to be made here that I'm just going to try to avoid. I would think Brady, he's going to, let's face it, Brady's, we can say what we want about the guy. He's a great quarterback, and he probably smells good. As a result of that, I think he's going to be swarmed by the bees much more so than others. I think his advanced hygiene is going to be severely problematic. I think they're going to try and pollinate him. I think they're going to try and pollinate him all game. So I'm going to say the Bills finally snap that home losing streak against the Patriots due to the fact that the bees are just going to be swarming sweet-smelling Tom Brady.
Okay. All right. All right. Frank? Bees. They're everywhere.
I don't know. This is very interesting.
I'm glad this is our last one, by the way, because I've run out of creativity.
Well, this is like, look, you think, it, depending on how many bees we're talking about, like, this affects how the ball is thrown or if it's thrown at all.
Yeah.
You have to sit anybody, or actually not even sit, like, send them home if you can, people who are allergic to bees.
Definitely.
There's swelling everywhere. Then as they sting you, there's piles of dead bees all over the floor. This is absurd. Yeah, this is a lot of, there's a lot of things that go into the killer bee scenario. But Tom Brady's the best quarterback in the league, so I go with the Patriots.
Yeah, this is, again, unfortunately, I think I agree with you guys. I think the Patriots, I think I agree with Frank. I think the Patriots get out ahead in this one because I think it is a very complicated situation.
Yeah.
And again, who do you trust in that situation? Rex Ryan? Bill Belichick? Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick probably has a bee scout. He's probably got a guy scouting the bees well in advance. He's probably got a camera in the bees' locker room before the game. And he's,
he probably did something like he put some pollen in the Bills football, like they switched him out for a pollen football while the
put
Bills
put some royal jelly on Brady to keep the bees off of him.
Yeah.
And then they go, something bullshit like that, I feel like Belichick figures a way out of the bee nightmare. So that was a long road trip followed by a tough game at home with the bees. The Bills season still viable.
Right. Now I did miss your pick in the last game, Scott. I apologize.
This was the Dolphins.
The Dolphins game.
What did I say about the Dolphins game? I think I said that the Bills were going to win because Tyrod and LeSean were better, than the Miami
Fair.
Duo. So that's
all right. So looking at the cumulatives, I have the Bills 6-2 with two divisional losses. Frank has the Bills 5-3 And Scott, you have the Bills at 1, 2, 3, and 5. So I think that's what we would expect based on our histories.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll come back in our next show, which will probably be sooner rather than later, given we're rapidly approaching the beginning of the season. We actually probably should do one maybe even before training camp, but we're going to revisit one of our favorite ones from last year, and we're going to have a time travel game. So everyone get ready for that.
Yes. Where will we play this time, or when?
The question is not where, Frank, but when. So let's do a quick potpourri of sad stories. And then we'll move on to things that are less sad. So we will start with Buddy Ryan dying.
Yeah.
Buddy Ryan died. Rex Ryan's dad died. And that's too bad because, you know, ultimately he lived a long, good life, but I'm sure it's sad for the Ryan family. And he was a big NFL innovator, and now he's not with us. Also, in the news recently, we have Marquise Goodwin, who tried out for the U.S. Olympic team in the long jump, and made the final heat as the 12th kind of placed guy, but then was unable to make the final leap, as it were, to end to the Olympic stardom, so he will not be going to the Olympics in Rio. And there you go for that. And then also you have, and I feel really bad because we just talked about this guy, but Kyle Callaway,
yep.
A former Bills offensive lineman, who was not with the team long, but also played at Iowa. But he was struck by a train in Arizona and was killed at age 29, which is obviously, I would not say that one death is necessarily more sad than the others, but certainly much more unexpected and tragic death in some ways, given his young age and likely kind of coming out of nowhere for his family. So, all very sad things. Why don't we go, Frank? Do you have any thoughts on any of this?
Obviously, I think, like you say, feel very sad for both the Ryan family and what was his last name again?
Callaway.
Callaway. Their family as well. I think that there is something to, you know, a younger life. It's a tragedy when a younger life is taken unexpectedly. I think hopefully, Mr. Ryan found some peace before he passed. And not that I knew that he was in any particular unrest, but, you know, maybe he had sort of was prepared for it a bit more. But, you know, Buddy Ryan was a little before my time, I mean, as a football coach. And so I don't really know I don't have very strong feelings about him. I think he was with the Eagles towards the beginning of my football watching. I think at the end of the 80s and 90s, he might have still been coaching some there.
I remember him punching Kevin Gilbride. That is one of my more vivid memories of youth, when they were both on the Houston Oilers staff.
Yeah. I think I know that story. I just think I don't think I saw it. Yeah, 86 to 1990, he was with the Eagles. 1993, the defensive coordinator of the Oilers, and for 2 years, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals from 94 to 95. Won 2 Super Bowls. He was a 500 coach, though, 55-55-1. His 2 Super Bowls were Super Bowl 3 and 20, so he would have not been the head coach for either of those, or the coach at all in Super Bowl III, I would imagine. I think he probably played 0-3 in the playoffs, but he certainly innovated defensively. Like, he was a great coach, so, you know, it's good to mark him as a historical figure in the NFL. I hope Marquise Goodwin makes the team. I think that's the only story I feel really comfortable talking about.
Yeah.
Because he sort of missed some time, and he was a bubble wide receiver anyway. Paul, do you have any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I'll start with the heavier news too. Obviously, Kyle Callaway, part of a very poor Bills draft class. Very sad to see him go. Good guy who's, you know, his dad thinks he was just trying to get out of the mud, and so he jumped onto the tracks, not realizing a train was coming opposite the usual direction it typically came. They are going to donate his brain for the study of CTE. So. That was some interesting news, kind of that story. Wow, but he wasn't part of the Bills for long. He never played a regular season game, let go right before the start of that 2010 season. But, you know, he had a good college career, and, of course, you always feel sad when someone loses their life before they hit 30 years old. So, Buddy Ryan, I remember him a little more vividly than him because, you know, I had a good friend growing up who was a big Eagles fan, so... I remember him just being the innovator for the Bears of that 46 defense that then he brought over to The Eagles, I remember him with the punching Kevin Gilbride thing and watching that. I remember him not panning out as coach of the Cardinals. But I remember thinking, like, this guy is the personification of football. And so it's a sad loss for the Ryan family. I'll never get to see his son win a Super Bowl, which is unfortunate. But hopefully, you know, they can keep him in their memories they go through this year. Goodwin, the least bad of the bad news, obviously. You're, you know, it's sad that, you know, he didn't qualify through the U.S. Olympic trials. It will be interesting to see, again, how his football career pans out now. You know, you think he'd be more football-focused, and will he end up on this roster? And if he ends up on this roster, will he be a contributor, or is this just going to be the worst summer of Marquise Goodwin's life? I guess we'll find out.
We will.
And that was the happy news I ended on.
Yeah, exactly. What was I going to say? So, yeah, on Marquise, in some ways, I think, I mean, obviously you want everyone to be able to reach their dreams, but at the same time, and given that he might make the team and might contribute this year, I don't know that he will. I mean, obviously, we drafted listedly, so I think there's definitely a chance that Marquise doesn't make the team. But I certainly think that going to Rio and being at Rio for an extended period is not necessarily going to be a damaging thing for him personally, because it's terrible in Rio, and the whole Olympics is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
He's going to be, you know,
secret blessing
water and having to avoid, you know, popular places or going out at night because it's dangerous, and yeah, probably best for him to maybe stay away. I mean, I get the, obviously, I'm sure he's disappointed, but I'm not that broken up ultimately.
Were either of you upset that he was trying out for the Olympics? Did we talk about that? Because I know there were some people that were like,
it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Right.
We're dumb, so that's why we didn't talk.
Okay, good. I think that's why we didn't talk about it, because we would have all just said, those are stupid people. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who said that is insane. So, right. Yeah. What was I going to say? So, the other thing was on Buddy Ryan. I will say that, as a Wisconsin fan, I can tell, obviously, everyone very quickly, that the Badgers basketball team, the coach on that team, Bo Ryan, 2 years ago, lost his father before the season and then made the Final Four, which is pretty good as far as, like, you know, winning four tournament games. So maybe the same thing. If the Bills won for our tournament games this coming season, that would be nice. I am getting a little bit of feedback from. I'm going to go ahead and guess the guy who may or may not be outside.
Okay, does it sound like I have a little feedback?
Now it does not. Now you sound
like, yeah, you sound much better now. So
okay,
yeah. Okay, so the other thing that we were going to talk about, and I didn't put it on the. We talked about it, but I didn't forgot to put it on the agenda, was the YouTube thing. For everyone who wasn't aware, the NFL is putting 98 classic NFL games on the YouTube for the kids today to watch.
The YouTube that the kids watch, yes.
And that will happen in August, but we will talk about it right now anyway, just because why not? And they were the 1992 AFC wildcard round versus Houston, the 1999 AFC championship game versus Los Angeles, the 1992 week two game at San Francisco, otherwise known as the no punt game. And so once those games are posted, we will be probably watching one of them during training camp. And we would love for you to, for all of the people out there to watch one with us. So Frank or Paul, why don't you talk about which one of those games you would like to watch as a collective right now? And then we'll leave it open for the fans to chime in the intervening period here. And then when August comes around, we'll let everyone know what we're going to watch. And we can all watch it together, and then we can talk about it the week after. Won't that be fun?
Yeah, I'll go, if that's all right. I think that I would choose the 92 no-punt game, because I think the other two, first of all, the comeback, all three games are excellent games to watch. And there's something wonderfully vicious about the 51-3 game that I think, though, when I rewatched it, I remembered, it all sort of most of it happens in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, and it was so, really that first half. You know, right. They're up 41-3 at the end of it. It was exciting. It was ridiculous. And then the second half is kind of, well, I'm getting into my own
running out the clock, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I think that while it's awesome, I think that one would maybe die out. And I think the thing with the comeback is, while that might be the best Bills game to watch ever, I think everybody sort of knows about it. And I think the no-punt game, it really... was, first of all, the Super Bowl we never got that we should have. And second of all, it's sort of an under-the-radar game compared to some of the other big games of that era. And to me, that was like the best. That was the Bills at their best. That game was my. That game has been my favorite game for a very long time. And so for me, that's why I would pick that one. It really is sort of underrated in the pantheon of Bills games, but it's bar none. It's excellent. It's an excellent football game. And you also get to watch an excellent Niners team. Like with the other games, yeah, like they blow that game or they lose that game. And in this game, this is truly like the Niners just didn't last as long. That's all it was. If the game was 5 minutes longer, like they very well might have won. So that's kind of why I would choose that one.
I am I normally like I do like order. So I'm also going to pick that game. It's funny because it is more under the radar because it's up against two playoff games, one which sent the Bills to their first Super Bowl, one which was the greatest comeback and remains greatest comeback in NFL history 24 years later. But beginning to, I mean, it was Pete Metzelaer's greatest career game. There was a play that shouldn't have been called a touchdown that was, or I think it was John Taylor scoring, and Kelsey might have knocked the ball out of hands before he hit the goal line. It could have been game-changing. It was just such a, it was an exciting back and forth, whereas the Raiders game, again, love to watch that. That wasn't back and forth. That was just demolition. And the Houston game wasn't a back and forth. It was just a bad and then very, very good. You know, it wasn't a slugfest. And just to watch beginning to end, I think that's going to be a very that's the one I'm looking most forward to watching. I do also want to give a runner-up pick because there are other games on YouTube, of course, that the Bills lost. And what I would like to see is the 89 AFC divisional round at Cleveland where Kelly threw for over, you know, 400 yards. Mm-hmm. It was just, that was really the beginning of the no-huddle offense that day in terms of the success it was having on a sustained basis. And it was, you know, it was the Ronnie Harmon drop. That's another great back and forth that the Bills lose, and I'm definitely looking forward to watching that, even though I know the ending will be a sad one.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because I'm more of the youngest of the three of you, and so those games are much more kind of things that I don't remember. And obviously, I think it's clear from the podcast that everyone wants to watch from you two guys that the San Francisco game is the one to watch. So we'll see what the fans think. We'll go with what you guys want to do, but I think that makes a lot of sense. But I will put in a brief plug for that 1999. AFC wildcard round at Tennessee, which I definitely remember watching, and all you have to do is watch the whole game and then turn it off with 5 seconds left.
Yep.
Because it's really enjoyable if you
after the Christie field goal, just turn off the switch.
Turn off the YouTube, and that's a fun game to watch.
That Rob is Johnson losing win. His Rob Johnson losing his shoe on the last drive. Dusty Ziegler throwing his shoe into the crowd.
I must have told the story about how I turned off the radio to go up to my office after the Steve Christie field goal. Okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, we'll see what the fans say. And if they say we're going to watch that game and cut off the last 5 seconds, we'll tell that story again.
We can certainly watch more than one, too.
And depending on how the season goes, we might get into the archives a bit early. Who knows? But we'll see how popular this little idea is with new listeners out there. So we have two things that we could talk about left. We have about 2 minutes left before our hour mark, judging roughly by my count. And that is, we can either talk about the top 100 players lists, of which there are at least two that I can talk about, or we can talk about Paul's fun Twitter question. So what do you guys want to do?
I see fun Twitter question.
Yeah, I agree.
Fun Twitter question. All right, Paul, why don't you do the fun Twitter question?
Certainly. This is, when I sent out the what the heck are we going to talk about tweet, Tom, with his usual prescience, says, hey, what about the effect of Brexit on the outlook of the post-Mario Williams defensive alignments? That's what we have to determine. So, again, the question is, Great Britain out of the EU, that's the legitimately happening right now. And how's that going to affect what the Bills are doing on defense without Mario Williams? So I don't know who wants to dive into this
I'll take
first.
The lead on this
all
one.
Right, go for it.
Yes, all right.
I'm gonna take the easy way out of this one, and so maybe Frank will think through some of the more deeper implications, the long-term implications.
Okay.
But let's be clear, Britain voted to leave the EU at some point in the future. They have not left the EU. They have not invoked Article 50 of the treaty to leave.
They may never.
All they have done right now is they had a referendum and 51% of the population said they wanted to leave. So at this point, there is no, the Brexit has not happened. They have voted to leave at some point, but it has not happened. So at this point, I think the bill's defensive line remains minimally thin.
Oh,
now, sure, the stock portfolios have taken a beating. If you had, you were overinvested in the EU market, which why you would be at this point, I have no idea. That's on you, buddy. But you got to talk to your financial advisor about that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say minimal at this point, but that's maybe the cheap way out of this one. Frank, do you have anything more deep?
Yes, if I could just have Paul repeat the actual...
I may have screwed up the question.
No, that's okay. The Brexit's effect
on the post-Mario Williams defensive alignment.
Yeah, I think that with the pound dropping and whatnot, I think that what happens is with the pound dropping, of course, everybody on the defensive line gets lighter overnight. Mm-hmm. They suddenly just weigh less.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without the full force of the pound behind them, they get swallowed up by these offensive lines, you know. There's real concern about the EU and what remains an EU country. Like, Ireland will still be an EU country, and Northern Ireland won't be, potentially. And so do we have to build a defensive or offensive wall between those two countries? Maybe. But, like, my point is I don't think the defense can get through any sort of customs wall. Also, what happens to those games in London now? Like, do we need a different passport? Like, what's going on?
Certainly less Europeans showing up for those games.
I think so. Well, exactly, precisely. Brits might show up, but maybe not Europeans. Or Scots, which would also maybe be Europeans, depending on how things go. I think it's, on a serious note, some of the frustration of people in Brexit is understandable, and I also think that now that, like, with everybody sort of getting what they, you know, a definite be careful what you wish for situation, maybe that's us with Tyrod Taylor, or that's the Tyrod Taylor 8-0 question, right? Like, we all are happy with spending the money, and then all of a sudden they'll be like, well, wait a minute, I didn't really think that would happen.
No. Anyway, we will discuss this more on our next podcast, on our other podcast, maybe next referendum.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I think we're you guys want to call it a nice tight hour here, or I mean, we can also do our kind of favorite post-game things in terms of things we can talk about. I was actually looking at some of these other YouTube games. There are some good ones in here I might want to watch anyway that have nothing to do with the Bills. So we can talk about that after, or we can talk about the Euro after, or whatever. Do you guys want to defend it?
I'll quickly shout out Cymru Brith. Cymru Am Bydd, the Welsh team did very well in the Euro, and I was very proud of them. And Portugal's a very good team, so I don't have much shame in losing to them.
No, Portugal's not that good. Paul, any final thoughts?
No. I think I like ending in a tight hour, especially considering, it's tough to me. It's tough to justify like an hour and 10 minute podcast on July 7th.
When we spend half an hour talking about if the Bills were playing in Escape from LA and Demolition Man, maybe there's an argument there. Okay, so if you want to talk about the Bills playing in various other post-apocalyptic movies, let's see, what was the one where Denzel was in it?
That's Demolition Man.
No, not...
Oh, no, he was actually
Snipes.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Book of Eli. The Book of Eli.
If you want to talk about those playing in Book of Eli or Clockwork Orange or...
The Ultraviolence would serve them well.
Yeah, exactly. Then, by all means, get in contact with us. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/bbillsmny, where I will do a better job in the future, maybe, of advertising the podcast in advance to encourage listeners to give us better things to talk about than what we came up with tonight. If you would like to talk to Paul on Twitter, we are always at @bbillsmny, and he usually live tweets during the season, and that's always good fun. There's also a email address, bbillsmny@gmail.com, and a blog hosting page of bbillsmny.wordpress.com.
And the Facebook.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Oh, that's what you did, my bad.
Yeah. If you want to help Frank do the dishes, he's doing them right now.
Actually, my wife was doing the dishes. She's hiding in the kitchen. And she decided to do some dishes.
This is like the old radio shows of yore, like with the sound effects. You ain't going to
get a Foley guy in the background, like, crackling some newspaper.
And, yeah, see? Who's at the door?
I'm answering, Sally.
So anyway, until next time, I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.